Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I found the picture the other day because it popped up on my phone of the banner at the World Cup in 2017, the peas on toast banner, which... along with the pylons, I think is the only legacy of this program when it eventually disappears into the ether. That, and I've looked on Wikipedia, and I think there's a justification now that the Leeds Rhinos in 2022, I don't know what year it is. I've got you on my screen in front of me, but my camera's down here. I've got to remember where the camera is. There's justification to call Leeds in 2022 dirty Leeds because the top two yellow card men, James Bentley of Ireland, he's now Leeds. Richie Myler, he still leads. Seven between them in 2021. What's going on? Well, it's the end of the year. And 2020 was rubbish. And we all accepted that come, you know, when March happened. And, you know, we all accepted, right, 2020 is going to be rubbish. But 2021, that'll be better. As it turns out, because we thought it was going to be better, it probably was worse than last year. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being negative. Especially because we don't know what's going to happen next. Sum up 2020 in rugby league, Phil.
I was trying to think of maybe a word or a phrase that would aptly describe it. While I was having my beans on toast, the food of the gods. Probably in limbo. Everything felt like that last year. You know, the season was delayed starting for obvious reasons. Fans were delayed back into the stadium for obvious reasons. There were a lot of games crammed in. For obvious reasons, some of which didn't take place. Then the World Cup was postponed. Then we sort of hoped that perhaps there'd be the meeting of the RFL and Super League to unite or reintegrate in some way. And that hasn't quite happened yet. And then we sort of hoped that there'd be that crossroads moment where we knew where we were going in the future. And we now know that the next 2 years are going to look pretty much the same while we still work on it. So I think you're right. Your summation originally that, because we accepted the world was in a very strange place, that 2020 was going to be a year that you would, to all intents and purposes, say that was difficult. We had to work really hard to get through that. Few big sigh of relief, only real casualty, Toronto, some of which may have been COVID related, but some of which wasn't. 2021, fresh start. But it didn't feel that way. And I think as well, some of the attendances once fans were back in stadium prove the fact that there was still this feeling of uncertainty around everything that went on last year. That said, and I think that is a valid way of looking at the year. There were some astonishing achievements. You know, what St. Helens did, men and women, even got a mention on Sports Personality. I think clearly the regeneration of the game in France. I hesitate to use the word Renaissance, because you can only look back when you've had a period of time and say that was the Renaissance. Hopefully they can kick on from that and this will be seen as a time of Renaissance. And Hull KR as well deserve a huge amount of credit for you know, getting 80 minutes away from a grand final, but also I think lifting a lot of spirits with the way that they played the game. They would be the high spots. Yeah, it was a tough year. It felt like a really long, tiring year as a fan. So I can't imagine what it must have been like for the players.
I don't need to sound negative. I've got no interest in going on Boxing Day. I might have to go because my nephew wants to go. I've not got a ticket yet, so I'm going to have to leave it to the last minute to book one.
Only seats. The standing areas have sold out.
But I don't think I'm ready yet for, especially a game that, you know, I know it's important for the clubs to make some money, but it's of no importance whatsoever. But
I think if you ask them honestly whether a game at this point of the pre-season was what they wanted, they'd probably say no. I think we also know that, you know, after about 10 or 15 minutes of seeing the new players and the new kit, it's an academy game. Now, there can well be some people that will, and we've all done it, stood there and go, I was there the day Jack Sinfield made his debut, and look at him now, he's whatever. But I think you're right. I think the thing about Boxing Day that is now having slightly less meaning is that we genuinely don't know what's going to be happening in January. We hope there's going to be testimonial games and pre-season friendlies and leading up to the season kicking off for the Championship and League One teams that month and Super League in February. But I just think none of us know where we are in life at the moment and what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. And sport becomes, again, that glorious irrelevance that we've spoken about. And I think before we get too bogged down in it's a difficult time I think we do need to say that yet again last year we had a difficult season, but the grand final that we got was as good as any game I've seen in the modern era. It was as good as any grand final I'd seen at Old Trafford. I think, you know, so much controversy, so much to speak about, write about, replay. The achievement of St. Helens in doing a male double and a female treble, we shouldn't diminish that by saying it was a tough season. They were astonishing. And I think that, you know, what you're right to be coming at it from a point of view of questioning where we are and where we're going. But let's also pay tribute to the teams that achieved and no greater side than the Red V this year.
Yeah, I don't want people to get me wrong. I'm looking forward to next season. I'm looking forward to 2022. I just can't be bothered with Boxing Day with everything going on. But yeah, let's talk about St. Helens. We'll start with the men because that's totally off-brand. They won the Challenge Cup. They finished second in the league. They won the grand final against the Castellans, who had a new name at Old Trafford, which we were back at this year. Obviously, the crowd wasn't great, but c'est la vie, doesn't matter. What do people expect? But a great year for St. Helens. Men winning the double, backing the three-peat, which everyone hates as a word, which we need to, you know, get rid of from the proper English language. But apart from the Catalans actually winning the division, St. Helens the team of the year.
Yeah, I think the Challenge Cup was fantastic for them because I think whilst the grand final is the pinnacle of a season's work and clearly winning it three times on the trot is absolutely astonishing. And should they do it for the fourth and they will start as favourites, then that's setting all new benchmarks. But I think the Challenge Cup meant a lot to them. They hadn't won it for 13 years. And that group of players, there were very few of them that had enjoyed winning at the National Stadium. And I think Castleford were the story leading to the final, you know, to win two of the rounds by golden point. And then arguably the best performance in the Challenge Cup. And forgive me that I didn't see too many of the early rounds with Championship teams in, was Castleford's in the semi-final against Warrington. Mm. That was the most astonishing 40 minutes in that first half. And, Cass more than deserved to be there. But at half time, we thought we really had a contest. It could go either way. Niall Evans clearly, you know, picking up the man of the match award on the losing side must tell you something about the way the Tigers played. But Saints did in that second half at Wembley what I think summed them up for the entire season. Yes, they were flamboyant. Yes, they could score lots of points. Yes, they had people like Regan Grace on the wing, who scored some wonderful tries this year. But when they needed to, they've learned under Christian Wolf how to shut a game down, how to freeze out their opposition. And it was a model 40 minutes in the second half to win them the cup. I thought that was as good a performance as they put up in the grand final against St Helens. The grounding of that was in the second half of the Challenge Cup final. And again, you know, being able to talk to a couple of them after the game, it's been a strange year. Nobody will ever have sympathy with people who write about the game, but it hasn't been easy not being able to talk face to face to coaches or players. But to get even a millisecond chatting to somebody like Louis McCarthy Scarsbrook at pitch edge, socially distanced. Him already drunk on the three bottles of champagne, he drunk on the pitch, was fantastic. And it meant a lot to them. And I thought actually that the Challenge Cup this year had a little bit of a reinvigoration. We're at Spurs in 2022. I think, there's excitement about the community clubs coming back and starting the second week in January. It's great to see, Galway Tribesmen and Edinburgh Eagles and Bridgend Blue Bulls and two teams from London all on that road to Wembley. I think it means a lot more when that happens. We've also got the draw for the second round, so you can, if you're a Swinton fan, Mr. Kellner, you can be planning your trip to West Wales. And it's great because it adds to that lustre and excitement. And the competition's even earlier again this year, which I think it needs. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the Challenge Cup final day out at Wembley. I thought Castleford were party to making that a great event, but Saints just too good on the day.
Well, on a tangent, as we've mentioned, the Challenge Cup final, what an interesting day that was, because as we were travelling down to Wembley, we weren't sure whether we were going to see the opening game of two, the 1895 Cup final, but we did. And Featherstone beat York in that one, which was a high-scoring, entertaining basketball clash, 41-34, it says it here on Wikipedia in front of me. And that was a really entertaining game. And the RFL took on the criticism, and I guess that's the right word, of 2 years before when they put the 1895 final on after and everyone had buggered off home. But here, there was plenty of people from York and plenty from Featherstone. I think the whole of the village of Fev was there, most of my family. And it was a great final, a great occasion for both teams.
Yeah, I think, again, you're right. That sort of summed up the season, that you're travelling to a game not knowing whether it's going to take place. And there were a few of those, but I can't pay credit enough to the players that afternoon, because some of them were making their debut, some were playing out of position, some didn't know they were playing until they passed their PCR tests on the morning of the game. And to put on a spectacle like that, fantastic. And I think what we learned from the 1895 Cup, which I think is something that we've championed right from when we heard it was a possibility. And I think we've said that for clubs in the Championship and League One to have meaning for their seasons, then this is an event that needs to be built and promoted, and we need to really get behind. And Wembley felt great because it was full of people dressed in yellow and people in blue and white, and there was a great atmosphere while that game was on, and it was a fabulous game. And even in defeat, York arguably scored the best try of the afternoon. We need to work to make that an even more meaningful event than it was, and again, a cup going to Featherstone, fantastic. It's I'm not saying they deserved it any more than any other team, but it gives meaning to the investment that people like Mark Campbell have put into the side, and for fans, there is nothing better than celebrating a little bit of silverware. And when the Super League teams can't be part of it, it's got to be a good thing.
Brilliant. Definite no try in that game as well that was given, which added lots of spice to it. But as it turned out, it didn't turn the results. And Robert Hicks, I reckon that's what made him retire, that decision. I better not say that.
Well,
in case he wants
the
to go back on
the good thing for... And the good thing is that he's still on the international referees panel, so he may well get his wish of officiating at the World Cup, fingers crossed, even if it's, a group game. Involving two of the lesser seeded sides, he could well end his on-field career in a World Cup, which is something he wanted. I hope he gets that opportunity.
Definitely still planning to do four games in one day, which I think is almost impossible, but I think I can make at least 3.5, but we'll see come November. I mean, I'm pitching that on the Northern Powerhouse of Rail between Sheffield and York. So, you know, less said about that, the better.
We'll get you an Uber, don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, they do sponsor the Super League, don't they, or the RFL or something. Go on, set some trains out. Just back to Wembley for a second. It does remind me, because you mentioned it, and I'd completely forgotten, Niall Evans won the Lansdowne Trophy, which to much derision by people. But it does show that after the event, it doesn't really matter because it's done and dusted. Everyone gets upset about it for about 10 minutes and then you go, oh, I forgot that happened. It's interesting.
If we want the best player who has the most decisive influence, then clearly you've got to take the vote after the final whistle rather than before. And again, that's not new. And with modern technology, I'm sure we can do that. I know that the BBC like to announce it just before the end of the game, but I'm sure we could work with them on announcing it. Yeah, and even being a surprise to everybody in the stadium when it's announced. And then, you know, you vote on your phone, those who are privileged enough to do so, as the final whistle goes. And more often than not, you'll get the right person. But I do think that Evans was fantastic that day, that every time he touched the ball, he created something. It looked like that if Castleford were going to pull anything out of the fire, it was going to be down to him. And over the course of the 80 minutes, I think his influence was astonishing. And as we've said many a time, if you don't get access to the stats, there's certain players in certain positions that are always going to stand out above others because you don't know that somebody's made 700 tackles in the game until afterwards.
Modern technology, of course, is bits of paper handed to someone from the RFL. If you don't know how the vote goes at the exciting Challenge Cup final at Wembley, which will be at Spurs next year, which we're all looking forward to because it's become somewhere different to go. There's going to be so many different places to go. And Arsenal next year with the World Cup. Many people won't have been to York yet, which is a nice little venue they'll be able to go to. Hopefully I'll be allowed in because people think I'm anti-York now, which I'm not. We'll talk more about that in a bit. So St Helens won the Grand Final. He won the Challenge Cup Final. Catalan Dragons won the League Leaders' Shield after an amazing finish at the Magic Weekend. We all remember the contrasting emotions of Bernard Gouache and Ken Davey as Catalans were the first team not from England to win some silverware. And there they were, league leaders. Couldn't quite do it in the grand final, but I'm not going to go off the cliche if you lose a final to win one. They lost to the best team in the competition for the last 3 years. But certainly, Steve McNamara, who I think history has now decided very unfairly removed from the England job while he was in the middle of doing something. And that didn't seem to work out well. He's certainly doing the business in the south of France.
I think, clearly the downside of, you know, the teams that win the grand final is the moment that we still only have the four. And until that changes, then, there'll always be a feeling that, you know, we're not quite fulfilling our potential as a salary cap sport. It's not supposed to be that way, which, again, is not to detract from those teams that do not only get to finals, but know how to win them. But I think, again, the Dragons getting there, followed on from Salford getting there, from Castleford getting there. We're starting to see more teams now that are getting to that final night. And what they need is the experience of that and being able to back it up the following year. And I think, you know, particularly you mentioned it on that night in 2017, that might have been Castleford's best chance. I think we knew that with Jackson Hastings in the team, that was probably Salford's best chance. What you'd hope with the Dragons is that, again, looking at the recruitment that they've done this year, looking at the young French players that they've got who are a year older, a year more experienced in that cauldron environment of what it takes to win those kind of matches. If they can get their form at the end of the season to match it during the middle of the season, if they genuinely have now cured their travel issues, and again, we're all saying this with the big asterisk that, you know, things could happen that may change this. I would hope that the Catalans are building something where every year you look at the teams that might actually win the competition and you put them down as the potential of a side that might. Again, it's hard to pick highlights in what we've already identified as been a difficult year, but one of them has to be the atmosphere At the Dragons Stadium, at the Brutus, even though we were all watching it on television, against Hull KR, when the players arrived and the flares were going off and they were being mobbed and they were walking through smoke. And it meant so much to them to have a home semi-final. They did what they needed to do to win that game. They weren't totally convincing, and I think Hull KR had probably expended so much energy beating Warrington the week before, which again must go down as one of the performances of the season. But hopefully the Dragons have spent a bit of the pre-season looking at those matches and saying, this is what we need to do just a little bit better, though, those small percentages on those occasions that get us into the actual winner's enclosure. But no, it was a fantastic season. They were all Imperial coming over here on chartered flights, and that what had been their Achilles heel virtually since they joined the competition proved to be their great strength. They got a way of doing it that suited them, won a lot of games on the road, played some good rugby, clearly defence orientated, but with that little bit of French flair as well, but did what they had to do to get to a grand final. And we shouldn't underestimate what a phenomenal achievement that was, nor should we criticise them for, I think, at least 1,500 of their fans turning up at 6 or 7 days' notice, with travel so difficult as it was at the end of last year. They created a great atmosphere outside Old Trafford, and we were fortunate enough to be standing amongst them when the horns were blazing and the choirs were singing and the French television were interviewing them, and Catalan ole, ole, ole was ringing out, and they were running into and out of the Manchester United shop with as many bags of souvenirs as they could get. And it was brilliant, and we want more of it. And we'll get a little bit more of that with Toulouse this year. Hopefully the Dragons can kick on from winning the League Leaders' Shield. That's an achievement, again, that we need to elevate. I know Saints decried it 1 year and perhaps didn't treat it with respect, which looking back, they will now regret. I think Castleford as well were focused on, we need to win the grand final, and not, it's the first time in the club's history that we've finished top of the league. We need to make a little bit more of that. I think there's genuine hope that the Dragons will be a lingering force and had a great year.
We asked on Twitter earlier, highlights of the year. Phil says, after 30 years of marriage, finally persuaded his wife to go to a game, the grand final. She loved it. What are you planning to go some matches next season? It's all downhill from here, Phil. And he also enjoyed Jake Mamo's post-match interviews with Jenna Brooks. I'm not sure Jenna Brooks enjoyed them as much as you, Phil, but I think we all did throughout the year. Tides of History was on the show earlier in the season. Says the man of steel walls won't be forgotten in a hurry, with a picture of Brian Carney looking down his camera, much like I am now, in the tribute to Steve-O almost. Matt Newsome, never heard of him. Now he's one of the besties, Matt.
Nice man. Oh, they're all nice people.
I mean, I don't think I've ever spoken to Matt properly, apart from going hello in a press box, but he's tweeted us, so he's all right. And hopefully get some work next year. First game back with crowds I got to was Cass versus Hull KR. Just a ripple of applause that greeted the players coming out just to warm up was a spine-tingling moment. And Alex Walmsley winning a mock against Leeds. It was like easy mode on a computer game. One man, 20-minute rampage. You were at that first game back, weren't you?
And I was.
That was emotional times for everyone just to get back to some kind of normal, which it might be again next year as well.
Matt's absolutely right. You know, the warm-up was one of those spine-tingling moments. It actually didn't matter who was going to win that game. It didn't matter how the season panned out from that result. Just being back amongst people, being allowed to release your emotions when the team that carries your colours ran out. And to be fair, Hull KR got as big a cheer as Castleford did, even though it was their home game. To be able to boo the ref in the right light-hearted way, just because you could be back and do that, and it was fantastic. And again, nobody really knew what they could or should be doing. You know, how close to each other they should be sitting, but just to see, you know, families there together, young kids with their dad and grandparents with their granddaughters. It suddenly redefined why sport is important. And we all talk a lot about results being important, but actually it is community. It's being together. And I think for a minute there as well, we all realised perhaps what had been lost as well. So as well as it was elation, it was poignant. It's a night I'll never forget. In what was effectively a meaningless match, it was arguably one of the most important of the entire year. And Matt's absolutely right about that.
I only saw one men's Super League game live in person. That was Wakefield Huddersfield, which must have been just after everything started up again. And I paid to go in, which is obviously something I haven't done for a while. And the first time I've been back at Bellevue, well, not since I was employed there, because I've been through a couple of women's games when it was behind closed doors. But first game with people around, it was a strange experience. I'm still not quite sure how I feel about everything at the moment, but there's a million things regarding that. I look at the league table. We've talked about Saints and Catalans. Probably at the start of the season, we'd have predicted Hull KR to be down at the bottom end. Obviously, they exceeded expectations in every way. And as you mentioned, that performance at Warrington in the playoffs is going to go down as one of those legendary ones in the history of Super League, which I know is not the history of rugby league as a whole. But I look at some of the other clubs. Warrington, I mean, they finished third, but didn't make it to the grand final again, didn't get to the Challenge Cup final. Wigan, obviously disappointing, get rid of their coach, bring back Sean Wayne after making a big pantomime of getting rid of him in the first place. I know he's not the coach, but he's there in some kind of senior role. Leeds are obviously building with more young players coming through. Also got rid of a halfback, signed another couple of players. They're going to be interesting next year. Cass, who are completely different now because they've got a new coach and a new style. New Cass era, hashtag. Hull, who always flattered to deceive, and now they've made their big signing. Huddersfield, who you're never quite sure what they are. Wakefield, who will be where we are because we just are. Salford, who I'm not quite sure of. And Toulouse, who no one knows about. They haven't even got a kit yet. It's going to be an interesting year for everyone in Super League because there's so many different things at play, so many coaching changes, so many changes of personnel. I still worry about Hull, but I don't know. Who is going to chase down Catalans and St. Helens? Will it be Wigan? Will it be the new Warrington under Daryl Powell? I don't know.
I think, again, it's probably too early to say, and even pre-season in the early days of those friendly games won't give us too much of a guide. No side's going to be giving too much away or risking too much in the cold of January. They're going to keep a little bit of their powder dry for when the season starts. I'd say that Hull KR may find it a little bit more difficult this year, that they were the surprise package, and what you tend to find in sport, and it, you know, cite the example for Sheffield United perhaps in the Premier League, is that after even Leeds United at the moment, if you've had a really good season, other teams work out how to play you, that what your strengths are, and they, once they stop you doing what comes naturally to you, you've got to find something completely different, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Hull KR try and do that. I think, again, the bookies have got them nearer the bottom of the league than the top of the league for next year. So that will be interesting how they respond to that challenge. I think Warrington will be really interesting, that no matter how you dress up the end of Steve Price's reign, it was terribly disappointing. To be nilled at home in a playoff game against a team ranked below you on the back of a really poor performance in the Challenge Cup semi-final, even allowing for the brilliance of their opposition on that day. I think there'll be a real sense of disappointment. But Daryl Powell is the great hope, and the way that he plays and what he gets out of players is what will be exciting Warrington fans more than who's donning the shirt at the moment. It'll be really interesting to see. I suspect they're going to start the season absolutely flying. Interesting also at Wigan for exactly the same reason. It wasn't that they didn't finish high up the table. It was that they kept getting nilled at home and they were the lowest scoring side in the entire campaign. Like even worse than Lee at some point, their points percentage ratio. And again, that entertainment value was sadly lacking, which is nothing really just to do with the coach. It's clearly he has a way that he wants to play, but once the players get on the field, they have to take responsibility, and clearly they had enough entertaining players in their side to have come up with a lot more of exciting fare than they actually did. So I think the pressure is going to be on Wigan to entertain as much as win. And that could make them unpredictable and dangerous, which they haven't been for a couple of years. I think you're right about Leeds. You can chart a progression from a pretty low point when you know, David Ferner was sacked through to winning the Challenge Cup final, and then you know, again, 80 minutes away from a grand final, clearly weren't good enough to be there. But every team has you know, injuries and COVID issues that tends to decimate the squad, and that was Leeds last year. Leeds has, and a lot of other clubs as well, but Leeds seem to suffer most in the key positions. And some of that was suspensions, which was of their own making. But if everybody is fit and the new players integrate, and I think, again, their half-backs, their new combination have played before, so I don't think there's going to be a huge settling in period. You know, they've been a combination at Canberra. So I suspect that Leeds might be up there looking to improve on where they finished last year. So, yeah, the fact that we've mentioned maybe six or seven teams, and Hull I have no idea about. I have absolutely no idea. Again, we were promised big change. They were so disappointed in the way they finished the season. They swapped one half-back for another. And they brought in a big player. They had plenty of big players. Again, it's how they want to play the game. You know, do they want to be a little bit more than, you know, overly physical against all their opponents? Can they add some guile to that as well? And ball movement. And with Darnell McIntosh there and Jake Connor, you know, are they going to play to those strengths rather than, you know, keep the game tight, which they tended to do more often than they didn't. But they could quite easily be in the playoff places. Already we filled them and we've got teams left over. And that's without knowing what Hull KR and Castleford and even Wakefield under Willie Poaching, which I think, they got to a point when you heard Chris Chester's post-match interviews where you almost wanted him to relieve himself of the reins because it was clear that he wasn't enjoying it. It was nothing to do with whether he was getting the best out of his players or not. I just think there was a real pressure on him that no man should really have put upon them. And, you know, I hope for his well-being, deciding to cut the strings worked for him. And clearly he's recruiting a lot of players at Lee at the moment. But Willie Poaching and Francis Cummins is a bit of a dream coaching partnership at Wakefield. And actually, I wouldn't underestimate what they might do this year either. Of course, relegation is back. Lee were the whipping boys last year. Will it be Toulouse this year? I think, you know, quite a lot of people are concerned about what the game might look like in 2 years' time and have got jumped up, perhaps rightly, on the back of we might get a television deal. We've got this French derby. I think we all want it for more than a year. I think there would be no bigger waste than Toulouse getting up and Toulouse going straight back down again.
And it's on Channel 4, so it's all going to be good. Everyone can watch it. It's going to be great. The one concern is, I don't want to get into the whys and wherefores necessarily, but as we've seen with football, there is some hesitancy over vaccinations, and there are some rugby league people on social media who are spreading what they call as facts, but are lies, mistruths. It's concerning that they listen to their doctors at their clubs when they want to take a pain killing injection to play a game so they can get a win bonus or whatever, but they're not willing to do this. Do they ask the same questions about what's in those pain killing injections, about what's in the supplements they take that they're no doubt given free by sports science companies? Do they, you know, we know it's happened in the past when they take steroids, etc. Do they check what's in those? Do they ask the same questions time and time again? We've got a lot of gullible people who I'm not sure can be re-educated necessarily because, and that's probably the wrong word, because some of the people they attach themselves to should be nowhere near the sport. But I can't understand why someone who pretty much lost their job because of what they did and the RFL sanctions on them can still be playing the sport. But that's a question for Doncaster and not for me. I didn't want to get deep into that, but now I have. So no, never mind. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I don't mind. But I'm more concerned about this. I don't know why it happens in Australia. Rugby league plays boxing. You can't come to me and talk about concussions and stuff on the pitch and then be a boxer. You know, you can't have one or the other. But there you go. Speaking of boxing, one of them's ended up at Featherstone, who finished second in the championship. They're one of the favourites to go up with Lee, who may as well not bother playing next year. The championship has got a new TV deal, which, as I've said before, I find fairly pointless because they got some great viewing figures on Sky towards the end of the year, and they've thrown that all away for nothing and seemingly no money. But Monday night rugby is back. We'll get behind it. York versus Featherstone, the first of those games, I think it is. Interesting times in the second tier, which obviously has a lot less money attached to it than it had before, and even less for League One.
Well, we were mentioning potential candidates for who might make the playoffs in Super League. We know that there are 2 years now where the team that finishes top of the Championship is going to, well, or wins the £1 million game or whatever we're going to call it over the next 2 years, it is going to be in Super League. You know, that ladder is there, and it cannot be denied. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, it could quite easily be Batley if they have the season of their lives. So there's a lot of teams who invested a lot in their playing squad who need to go up over the next 2 years. And we have seen in the previous couple that clearly there was a favourite candidate that almost had a perceived advantage with the quality of the players that they signed. So you had Toronto, then you had Toulouse, and it always looked like they were going to go up. This year, I genuinely don't know. Clearly, you can make a case for Featherstone and the fact that they get to those games that they've yet to quite get over the line, but they've now got a coach that can give them a game plan on that last day of the season that more often than not tends to work. He's been in that position before. You mentioned Lee, clearly that they have a passionate owner who wants to give them the best chance of getting back up again. You look at Halifax, who I think have recruited more than any other club. Bradford, we keep being told, are the sleeping giant. They can't afford over the next 2 years not to be part of that close process of going up. We're not sure what Newcastle are going to be like, who've gone full time. York, arguably had a bit of a mixed season last year. Getting to Wembley was fantastic, and should be celebrated. But I think their league form suffered a little bit. They too were a side that had a lot of injuries, and in key positions could barely get the same halfback pairing out. You've got six teams there, all of whom you could make a very good case for actually, perhaps being the team that get promoted. So it will be a very interesting. It's a good year for Premier to have it because I think with the right choice of fixtures, then there's a narrative there, and I think as a broadcaster that's what you want. I also think that there are other teams in that division like Batley and Dewsbury who on their day can be the real disruptors. But if you don't take teams like that seriously and you don't prepare properly when you play them, they will turn you over. You know, going to Cumbria in the early part of the season is not going to be easy. And sometimes you're going to have to do that three times. So it's going to be a good year in the Championship this year, albeit, as you say, with less money. But you just feel like there's an egg timer there and the sand is running out, and it's who can get through that little gap into the Super League and perhaps stay there before I think everything is going to change come 2024, because it needs to for another TV deal. But there is a stay of execution. We're staying as we are for the format for the next two seasons. The winner of the £1 million game will be in Super League, and there will be some people desperately, desperately trying to be there.
It's reminiscent of when Castleford and Widnes were both in there. Was it 2006, 2007? One of those. Both gambled, both got to the grand final. One of them won and one of them lost, and obviously had issues from there. Hopefully there's no financial issues from whoever doesn't go up this time, but it's a difficult league to get out of. And we've got new homes, of course. London moving to Wimbledon. They've got their new Wimbledon-inspired kit. This might be informed in Fulham. And Sheffield Eagles, hopefully, eventually, will head back to the city because they desperately need to, and not be refugees everywhere around the South and West Yorkshire as they are at the moment. But interesting division, as you say. It's going to be fascinating. Halifax doing the opposite of Wakefield's recruitment of signing players from the bottom end of the Super League. They signed all the players in the bottom end of the Super League to be in the Championship. Let's see how that goes for them. Oldham and Swinton relegated. Oldham moving back to Oldham in League One, which is an always interesting division. New names there. Midlands, who we spoke about a couple of weeks ago with Alan Robinson, which is going to be fascinating to see how that all comes about. On the summer bashes back next year, of course, in that very summery location of Leeds.
We do occasionally get sun in Leeds.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's just not particularly. It's a destination.
There'll be an ice cream van, don't worry.
Yeah. League One, which of course now sees the Midlands Hurricanes, but also, excitingly, controversially, Ottawa Cornwall Things. Read the interview with Neil Kelly done by our friends at Rugby League News Hub, or whatever they're called on Patreon, Steve and John and Ross. Just sent a speculative email to Eric Perez. Dear Eric, do you have a coach? Love, Neil. And he said, no, do you want to be the coach? Love, Eric. And that's how it worked. So I had to move from Wakefield to Cornwall. Why would you want to leave Wakefield? We've got a museum and everything here. But no,
but not a rugby league museum.
No. And no players in Cornwall. So, oh no, there's...
Well, they've got two. They've got Anthony Mullally and a native from Gloucestershire.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. You can't predict what's going to happen in League One because it's almost impossible to do. I mean, North Wales up there last year, Keith Lee, always with big ideas, Andrew Henderson in there now, Doncaster, as we mentioned. You know, they're there and thereabouts. Hunslet, where we may be in January at some points, depending on the things.
If allowed. Asterisk.
Yeah. Scholars starting again. West Wales definitely starting again. It's a competition that continues to survive somehow.
Well, again, they know for the next 2 years there is some funding. It isn't much. It certainly isn't what they've had in previous years. But I think they'll be under the realistic idea that may run out in 2 years' time, that, you know, unless there is significant investment in the sport that trickles down all the levels, then clearly there is going to be a focus on Super League and the Championship and, you know, 2-10s or the derivation of it, whatever it might be in the next format that is thought of by the strategic review group or in concert with the RFL, whoever is given the responsibility to do that. There comes a point where, you know, return on investment in League One will probably mean we don't give you any money. And the top teams in that division gravitate to the Championship and the lower ranked teams become super community clubs. So they know the writing's on the wall. And again, that's going to lead to a huge amount of jockeying for position, trying to sign the right players, hoping to put a run of games together. So there is the potential for it to be fascinating by the status quo remaining as it is. I think there are quite a few of us that are a little bit concerned about what the future may look like and why we haven't got to the point of knowing what that is already and who is discussing that and how it's going to work. And that may well be partly to do with external finance coming in, who also want to say on that. It may also be to do with, let's see what Channel 4 do with the image of the sport, and they may, you know, not have some direct input in the structure of the game, but actually may make some suggestions that say, look, if you want a serious amount of investment from us handing it on to somebody else or even ourselves, if we have that level of money, then what we'd like is X, Y, or Z. And all that's got to play out. So I think for the next 2 years, we all three divisions have got as much to play for as they ever have. So get along and watch your team, because I don't think you'll be disappointed.
More exciting than Cornwall being new is the amount of new teams set up in the other things in rugby league, you know, the Women's Super League South, which I don't know how many of those teams existed necessarily before, but there was a competition and six teams were in it. And Cardiff and the Army met in an exciting grand final, won by Cardiff.
In the last minute.
So that was exciting. Leeds Rhinos won everything in the wheelchair game. Much to the chagrin of everyone who doesn't like Leeds, but they're quite good. And now Wigan have got a team, even though it's just Leyland with a different badge. Lots of other teams have set up teams, which is good. There's a million women's teams being set up. I don't know where all the players are coming from, but that's an issue for teams to fill up. I don't know where the teams are going to be filled up in the Super League, let alone below the Women's Super League, but again, we'll talk about it in a minute. The wheelchair game, and it was my first time going to a game, was that England versus Wales match at Sheffield. Was that in May? I can't remember. It was now May, June time. it was a great experience. It was a great presentation of a product. Yes, the match was a blowout scoreline in the end, I guess, for England, but you didn't feel like you didn't see an international, and there was some great skill, and it was exciting, and people have seen it for the first time on the telly. They got the expert commentary. Then we had the grand final, the Challenge Cup final on telly as well, the internationals at the end of the year on the BBC. What a great year it was for Wheelchair Rugby League, not just in terms of on the field, but in terms of exposure. And that was the most important thing about the sports personality thing, which I didn't watch, apart from the, you know, the clip. And it's lazy. It's what it is. I'll write more about it in the magazine. But the fact that there was exposure for not just the men, which is important in growing the game as a whole.
Yeah, I think there's more potential at the moment for investors, for participants in anything other than the men's running game. Clearly, that is going to be the one that generates the most amount of income. But the to be able to add on to that, we can offer you Women's Super League, a standard that will lead into international games at the end of the year with the World Cup. Fantastic. The personalities that we're getting to know in the PDRL, DRL wheelchair game, the touch game now has had a boost and an influx of resource, which is great. All of this, I think, adds to the fact that if you're going to call yourself all inclusive, then that you need to offer the sport to everyone. But the format for me that worked better than any other this year was the wheelchair, because I think we said it when we'd watched the grand final, that after about 5 minutes, you actually, and I know it sounds stupid and people may well say you're deranged and it wouldn't be the first time and it wouldn't be far off the truth, but actually you forget you're watching people in wheelchairs playing rugby league. You are watching rugby league. You're counting the tackles. You're trying to work out, are they going to kick early? Where would they place the ball on the line? Who's going to run through? And the skill level involved, which you appreciate even more by being at a game, not least the transfer of a tag from your lap to your shoulder, which you can watch it on the telly, but see it done at speed live. That dexterity with a whole wheeling your wheelchair and trying to pass the ball as well, it is just astonishing. So I think that it was a massive year for Wheelchair Rugby League, and again, everybody I think we've come across who plays the game, administers the game. When we say we need people that have got the sport at heart, they have. Clearly, they want their teams to win, but the ultimate aim is for the national team to become the world champions, and everybody seems to be working to that, which is great. They've got a plan for expansion, which they think they can achieve, and I think they can work with foundations like is happening at Sheffield at the moment, whose wheelchair team that have just started, having huge numbers at training is because it's being done through their foundation and not the club itself. I think you add that to what is happening in the women's game, and clearly you've hinted at some of the issues it's going to have, that as you grow there are going to be teething problems, and now we've seen Holly Dodd move over from Castleford to York, and whilst we acknowledge and appreciate the team that York are going to have and say, well, maybe St Helens and Leeds won't have it all their own way in the women's game this year, you then start having concerns about, well, who actually is going to be turning out for Castleford, and where are the young York ladies who've helped build the club, where are they going to play next year? So, I still think there is massive potential in the women's game, and the danger would be to rush it too quickly and spoil what we've got. But clearly that part of the sport, as in everything that isn't the men's running game, is looking pretty healthy at the moment and investable, which is more important than anything.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing some more wheelchair games in person in 2022. And certainly the World Cup, as mentioned, I think it's the 10th or the 11th of November next year. There are two games in Sheffield in the wheelchair competition, and then two women's games in the afternoon / evening at York, including Australia and New Zealand. And I think you can just about do 3.5 games going from Sheffield to York. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'll drive you. I'll risk the 3 points on the last. I'm joking. I'm a very careful driver.
So I'll just tweet you a good lad and everyone will be all right with it. But the World Cup's going to be exciting. And we were angry when it was called off, but everyone's positive there. I think it gives them a bit more breathing room just to get things sorted, because it would have been a rush this year. And as we've seen now, not to use the missing example, but the Barbarians fiasco again. 2 years in a row that's happened, isn't it? Or 2-3 years in a row the Barbarians have faffed around, yeah, with COVID protocols, and the BBC still treat them as if they're important. No, it's just a piss up. Come on. Be serious. But the women's the wheelchair was good. The LDRL continues to grow. PDRL was under the radar this year.
Understandable.
It's interesting to see where that goes, and the World Cup, you know, Warrington claiming to be world champions, which they're not. You know, I think we need to be careful about these things. You know, when people claim things that are not what they are, you know, we need to stop that.
I think the important thing, as you pointed out, is that we get the first PDRL World Cup. It will be an official Six Nations played at Warrington. We will be able to crown a champion. Likelihood is it won't be Australia, which is always good. And I think we'll get some celebrity endorsement. And we already know that, you know, Adam Hills is likely to possibly even be donning the green and gold. And if he is, then great. We'll never hear the end of it. So that's fabulous. But I think you're right. You've got to be very careful about how you grow these things. But I think they're very, very valuable additions to our portfolio. And more than anything, two things. One is, if you get the chance to go and watch it live, do, whether it's women's wheelchair, PDRL, LDRL, because it's great entertainment. But the other thing is as well, if you're an investor and you can, you know, the one thing that we're hoping, the realignment, for want of a better word, will be between the RFL and Super League, is that we will just have one suite of properties to sell to potential sponsors or investors. So it won't be, oh, well, if you're interested in that, could you go and have a meeting with that guy? And if you're interested in that, could you have a meeting with that girl over there? It'll be all under one roof. So if you want to get involved in rugby league and you say, well, actually, we are sort of interested in having our name on the men's shirts for the World Cup, but how much would it cost to be involved with a women's team? And you know, then that's great. That's what we need. There is reason to be optimistic in those areas for sure.
In the RFL Super League remarriage, which one's Elizabeth Taylor and which one's Richard Burton? There's one for the teenagers. There must be more modern example, but I don't know. St. Helens won everything in the men's game, apart from the League Leader Shield. They did win everything in the women's game because they dominated the season almost. it was a mess of a season because of COVID, because games being called off, because doctors weren't there, which is a shambles, and never really, I don't think that was ever really picked up enough how much of a shambles that was, especially to be, you know, the first time it happened, I was on the way to the games and found out before I got there, so managed to not go to Bellevue. The second time, I was sat in Bellevue. The teams were warming up. They warmed up for an hour and there was no doctor. You know, come on.
That's where we've got to be more professional. But clearly, I think there is a genuine desire to be so. And I think you were right to highlight the Southern Division. At what point they're able to regularly take on the teams that are now in Super League, you know, time will evolve that. But the fact that they're having a little dabble in the pool stages of the Challenge Cup, great. And I think there's more potential in the South to get a wider reservoir of talent than there is in the North. So I wouldn't be surprised if over a relatively short space of time, those teams like Cardiff and London and the Army, if they are garnering major... I mean, I saw a story this week about... Ireland rugby unions, women teams are really so almost on the verge of being disbanded. I think we're going to be able to offer them a rugby league alternative. So I think, you know, York have picked up a couple of England, it's Sevens rugby union players. We get this right, and it could be something.
This will be a perverse statement, and I hope people take it the right way. Of course, we want to see everyone involved get paid, but we're smart enough at the minute that we know that there's no money, and so there isn't any money going to players, which is not a good thing, but for the development of the sport and for it to grow, it is, because we're not bankrupting anyone at the minute. If you turn it into an arms race, which women's football has become, you know, Man City didn't exist a few years ago, now they're, you know, in the European Cup and everything or whatever, got to grow organically. I still stand by, we've grown too fast, and I think we still are growing too fast. But I mean, the positive from this season is Wakefield didn't win a game, but we didn't have the highest defeat of the season. So, you know, that's got to be a positive. That's got to be a positive.
As long as the players enjoy it and don't get put off by the structures, then it'll build.
We welcome Barrow and Lee Miners into the competition next year. They'll be in the Super League 2 as opposed to Super League 1. Poor Castleford. I don't know how they're going to go in that competition. I mean, there is definitely a... For my mind, it's still going to be Saints and Leeds, then York, and then Wigan, Cass and Huddersfield in some kind of combination. You may even put Huddersfield above Wigan and Castleford, I don't know. But let's talk about St Helens before we get on to York. No, let's talk about York first, because we'll end with St Helens being great. It's not meant to be a criticism of York. They have done nothing wrong. But pretty much all they've done, they've gone from the bottom of the table to the top end by taking the players from another team who were at the top end. They're now going to end up at the bottom end. So they've not really strengthened anything in terms of the competition, but they've weakened one of the clubs already in it. Now, yes, I understand they brought in players from elsewhere and these rugby union players and whatever. So I'm not having to go at York, but it's not the fairy tale that some want us to believe it is. And we were sold before the Challenge Cup final, because when they started their Challenge Cup journey, they only narrowly beat Wakefield, I think very late on in that game, with their original squad. So let's not pretend that York got to the Challenge Cup final based on the team who were bottom of the league at the start of the season. Again, that's not to criticise York. I have to be careful. I'm not criticising what they've done or how they've done it. Of course, if you've got a coach who took a team to the League Leaders' Shield, a grand final, two Challenge Cup finals, of course, players are going to follow her. Of course, that's going to happen. They want to play with their mates as well. Of course, that's why a lot of people have left Castleford to go to York. What can Castleford do about that? Nothing. Can they offer? You know, York have got better facilities. They're playing the games at the main stadium now. Castleford can't offer them better training facilities, can they? Because Castleford haven't got better training facilities.
I think one of the things I would say in York's defence is that they have seen the value of women's rugby league. They put it on a par with men's rugby league. They've made an investment in the women's game, and that should be applauded. I think the issue for clubs like Castleford, until they have facilities that they can genuinely share out. You know, why are the top teams successful in the women's game? Because York have got St John's University, the women are accessing those facilities. Leeds have got Leeds Beckett University, the women are accessing those facilities. Saints have got almost parity between the men's and women's teams in terms of strength and conditioning and all the back. Well, the teams that are thriving at the moment are at the clubs where they've realised that they need to make an investment in that women's team. And I think they should be praised for that. Cass are limited to what they can do because they don't have the facilities, but also what they can hope is that in the schools and the colleges where women's game is being played, they have a raw material of talent there. And that's what they need to dip into. And I'm sure that they're doing that. York are doing it the other way. They're doing the Melbourne Storm model of, you know, sign the best players you can. And then hopefully other young girls will start playing the game in the city and it'll become self-generating. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's not the clubs, it's the regulations. If there are no transfer rules, then why should anybody be stopped from moving from one club to the other? If they're not getting paid or they're getting a contribution to their expenses, then clearly the onus is on them to make that decision to do all the travel. And, you know, we saw that with St Helens. You know, Amy Hardcastle made the decision of virtually travelling across the Pennines to play for them. It was exactly the right decision for her at this stage of her career to be doing. So, I think you're right. There are clearly going to be teething problems if you expand and you haven't got quite the base of talent there to service everybody. But yeah, I'm still optimistic that the women's game offers us the greatest possibility of finding new spectators and new investors.
I still don't understand how Amy Hardcastle wasn't on the Woman of Steel shortlist. Can't understand that at all. It's no surprise to me that the top four teams in the playoffs, and I know Castleford obviously have dropped back now, but the top four teams, as you say, you know, Saints, Leeds and York have the best facilities available to their players. And also Saints, Leeds, York, Castleford And I know the, you know, Tom at Castle, it's different, but Saints, Leeds and York, when I ask, can we get someone on to talk about semi-finals, finals? Yeah, who do you want? And that's part of the battle. I've left Wakefield out of there because obviously I've got the relationship with the club as well, but ask and you get a reply. Get a reply. It's nice just for someone to reply. But, you know, the teams that take it seriously, the teams at the top of the table. You know, good luck to York next season. They've got a lot to live up to now. They're going to have a target on their back. Leeds have made, I think, the best signing out of the players from Castleford in Georgia Roach. And Emma Lumley's going to add some grunt to their pack. Huddersfield have pulled off that coup with Shona Hoyle. That's a big signing for them. And Saints are Saints. And they were superb. And I look at this league table in front of me now. In the playoff series, in four games, they conceded 6 points. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, no. Yeah. At any level, that is astonishing. And they deserve enormous credit. And again, I think the one thing we took out of being able to interview some of them, being able to see them on, even summarising on men's games, whatever it might have been. I think they've got a group of players that are a credit to the sport as well. Not only can they play it, play at a very high level, and I've got a huge commitment to one another and put in a lot of work, even during lockdown. They made a pledge to each other that they were not going to suffer heartbreak again in finals. And it showed. They were untouchable. The 1982 Australians who came over taught us that the rugby league we thought we were playing wasn't the way it was played anymore. I think the Saints women have elevated women's rugby league this year to another level. And clearly, you can't compare them with Australia, where the women get paid and their season is shorter and more intense, and they've got state of origin. They've got a natural rival in New Zealand that are not far off in terms of standard either, which always helps. But the way some of the women played this year, and it would be invidious to pick out any particular one of them, but every time I watched Carrie Roberts, I thought she was one of the best players I saw last year, never mind whether it was men or women. Just as a centre was everything you would want, powerful, brilliant on defence, but superb for the winger outsider as well. And she came through the ranks of the army. So I think, you know, there is a lot to be to be encouraged by. And the thing that I think we said about the wheelchair applies as much to the women. We've got some real marketable personalities here. And whilst it's going to take a little while for the next generation of young men to cement themselves in the national consciousness, the route to the public for the women is not quite as long. And, Jodie Cunningham will be as well known for the brilliant way she speaks about the game as she is for the fantastic way she plays the game. And we want more of that.
Had they not won that semi-final at York against Leeds, I'm not sure how the season would have gone, but they did. And that was it from there. They knew they could beat Leeds in a big game. And they did. And went on to win everything. Grand final, they nilled Leeds on home soil. I know Leeds don't play it, Headley, but doesn't matter. 28-0. He was a good end to the season.
They were fantastic. And it was great that they did get recognition at Sports Personality as a potential team of the year. And long may that continue.
So that was 2021. Congratulations, Netherlands. They won Euro D, which we drew. So that was good as well.
Still on the, still on the world for World Cup qualification in 2025. So on the road for that. If you want to coach the Netherlands, you could well be in a World Cup qualifier, one of your early games.
I think there's some women's Super League jobs up as well. No World Club Challenge appears next year. Well, that's not a surprise, regardless.
Again, I think there wasn't last year and nobody batted an eyelid. We're worrying about how we're going to get to and from France. So to get a team to Australia and back at the moment, whilst I feel really for the Saints players who would have loved that experience. And I'm sure if they'd have been told there's a slot in the calendar that you can fly to Australia, they would have done if asked to do so. You can understand logistically why that isn't going ahead next year.
You know, if it wasn't for the timing of the World Cup, I standing by the theory that a Jodie Cunningham or someone of her ilk is more likely to end up on Strictly or Celebrity MasterChef or any of these things than a man at the minute, just because that's the way sport in this country is going. We saw that. If you haven't seen that, there's nothing we can say, whether you like it or not, when it's shoved down your throat. It's happening. There's nothing you can do about it. I've not watched the Winfield Hill thing yet. I've not watched the Winfield Hill thing yet, but she's another one of those great people. And I go back to 2020, at the start of the year, before everything, at the season launch at Huddersfield for the season that never happened. And she was there right to the end, Courtney Winfield Hill, speaking to anyone who wanted to speak to her. And I remember, was it a couple of weeks before the Super League launch? I think it was before the championship, wasn't it? The champion club buggered off early from that one. And didn't speak to everyone who wanted to speak to them. So some people get it. I know it's not the most important, you know, it's they've got other things better to do than speak to you or I, but some people understand the some even people get good, the other game.
My good lady's got better things to do than speak to me. So yeah. I would understand that.
I think that's the year. And I think we're looking forward to next year. We're, you know, again with trepidation, with a little bit of worry, but just remind me, because this has come through the person that pointed it out to me. Of all the people, you know, everything's rubbish, but, you know, there's Rob Burrow, got a thing through the post, and Kevin Sinfield. I know he's not part of us anymore. He's part of us, isn't he? Yeah, he's got a new thing.
Well, apart from the fact that he's got a trustee at Rugby League Cares now, I thought it was great when Gary Lineker, when mentioning his latest effort for Rob, said, and still with Rugby League, which, of course, he isn't. Brilliant. We'll take it.
Well worth the money, Lineker.
We'll take it. We'll take his knighthood as Rugby League. I think you're right that, you know, we're right to look forward to 2022 because of what 2020 and 2021 was. But also, I genuinely think we will get a World Cup at the end of this year. And that is going to be a significant boost for the sport, something we need to build up and look forward to and work towards. And, you know, unless the pandemic intervenes again, I think there's a real willingness from Australia and New Zealand to come and make it something a little bit special. So we should build that up, look forward to it. I think the only other thing I'd want to say is that the people that have stood by the various platforms that carry the words 40 and 20, can't thank you enough, whether it be this podcast, the live ones that we've done, the going on the road, whether it be the magazine or people just sending us lovely messages about some of the things that we're trying to do to help promote the sport. I genuinely can't thank you enough. It's tough for everybody at the moment. So to have your support and occasional kind words about, you know, what we're trying to do, and it means everything. And I genuinely mean that. So thank you to everybody who is watching this or takes an interest in what we do.
Obviously that goes for me as well. And I know, Mark's not been part of the program this year. He's got very good reasons not to be part of it, which I'm not going to go into. But you know, he appreciates your support when he's on the telly. And fingers crossed he's on it more. He's going on the darts. He's at the darts. I'd love to be at the darts.
He's going places, the lad.
He's a getting it. Down at the darts. He can talk about people chucking arrows at a board.
He got the 9 darter, didn't he?
He did. I would say I'm jealous, but as I've said before, I'm never jealous of people who are good getting opportunities. I'm always annoyed at people who aren't good getting opportunities, but that's another thing for another. This is my negative personality. So that's it. That's 2021. We're looking forward to 2022. Thank you for watching and listening and downloading and sharing. I mean, John Davison sent us a load of pictures of things, but I don't know what they were. I've been working today. That's why, if you're watching and you're wondering why my left eye's closed, I've been looking at two monitors all day, and my eye just gives up and it doesn't work properly. So I have to squint half the time.
But yeah, have a good break yourself over the festive season.
One more day to work. I'm tempted on Christmas Day because I might have some time in the evening. I might go live and do a quiz or something. So I might do something live on Christmas
Day. Let me know. Might be drunk.
Yeah. So
join you.
I started writing a quiz book last year in lockdown and never finished it. So I've got some questions. So we'll do a quiz about the Premiership and stuff. But that'll be Christmas Day. There'll be another special best of thing, which I'll put together eventually. And we'll be back in the new year, and it'll be all good, and everything will be exciting. And 2022 will be better than 2021. My wife just looked at me half asleep and just nodded her head and gone, no, it won't be.
Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.